From the bayous in Louisiana to the timber country up north, you'll find them out on the trap line chasing furs to put up on the board. Mixing up another batch of that magical stuff, chilling around the fire after the show. Hey, it's Sarah and Jeff, and maybe a guest on the Trappin' Radio.
Welcome to Trapping Radio. We are here at Trapping Camp, and we are with a special guest. What did we call it earlier? A three-peat. So Chris Walter is joining us today, and we have been with Chris all week trapping muskrats here in North Dakota. So Chris is familiar with the show. He's been listening for a long time, and I know Clint supported that, and we sure appreciate you listening to this show and being on here for the third time. So last time you were on here, we were on a fishing boat, and we were catching walleye and trout and salmon, and now we're catching muskrats. So anyway, welcome to the show. Thanks for agreeing to sit down with us. And
In North Dakota.
I guess you have no choice. We're kind of all trapped here together.
That's okay.
But anyway, I guess we'll thank our sponsors, F&T for harvesters, everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling, and Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. Alan out of Iowa has just about everything you need, and
some things you don't.
That's right. Remember when he talked us into buying that collar? He's got lots of collars too. Yeah. So we've had some fun buying things that we didn't need.
But we will go coon calling again, because that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it turned out to be fun.
Yeah, so, one of those would come in handy around here. Yeah.
That would be fun.
With all our spare time.
Yeah, right.
Not too much of it.
With the wind they have here, I'm not sure that you'd have to have that thing on high all the time.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure I want one of these little grizzly bears come bearing down on me.
Mm-hmm.
These coon out here are big. It's springtime, and they're still big. They're really long. They're a lot longer. If you have never seen a North Dakota raccoon, they're I don't know, they look like a foot longer than what a northern Michigan raccoon is. And ours, you know, on the top end's like 30 pounds, so.
Yeah, we caught one in a beaver set. Chris, you pulled it out of the water. And that thing was monster, soaking wet. Usually, you know, they're shriveled up, look like scrawny little things. That was a monster coming out of the water.
Yeah, and the two that you skinned, Sarah, I carried them down. I couldn't believe how much the carcasses weighed. It lightens them up quite a bit, but they're still long and lanky.
In the fall, they'll have 3 or 4 inches of fat on them, too. When I trapped out here, I had to put up a bunch of those raccoons on large coyote boards.
Yeah.
They're massive.
That's right.
Well, apparently everything isn't bigger in Texas. So how many years have you been... You know, like you said, you and y'all are in the fall, and this, we said this is the spring. How many trips have you made out here, and what, you know?
This is my fourth one. The first time I came for muskrats, and then that fall I came for coyotes, and then the following spring I came back for muskrats. That was 2 years ago, and here we are again. Last year I didn't come out. I was busy, and they had had a severe winter. The water was really low, and they had a month straight of 20 below, so I figured that wasn't going to do the muskrats any favors. But this year looked good. They had they had a bunch of rain and a bunch of snow last winter, and it brought the water up, and obviously the rats have bounced back pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Not in a lot of places. The places where I expected that we'd really be clobbering them, there aren't as many, but we're finding real good pockets of them other places, so a lot of country to cover.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, over the next hill might be the next new honey hole.
Got to keep going.
Yeah, you just mm-hmm. never know.
And one side of the road might be really good, and then the other side is just not great. So you got to stop at every available opportunity to see what's there. And you're a heck of a heart. You're a great trapper, Chris. We've been riding around with you, and my gosh, I mean, you're so organized. You got so many traps, and you've got a system, and you've got it all figured out. And
like Haggerty.
Yep. But
yeah, the way I figure, if I'm going to spend 30 hours in my truck driving here, I bet it had better be ready to hit the ground running when I get here. So, mm-hmm. it takes time. The first time I came out for rats, just kind of winging it, and you know, I'd watch some videos and read what I could, and just try to figure it out as I went along. You've seen our floats. We're on the third generation. I think the third generation floats will be around for a while.
So talk us through Gen 1, Gen 2, and Gen 3, and kind of what you've learned along the way. Just kind of how has it changed from year 1 to now? Kind of.
The first ones I built, I just copied the ones I had seen other guys using, and you know, plywood with some foam on the bottom for flotation, and put some rails on the sides, and and they were, you know, they were heavy and not really buoyant, and then I found some thicker foam, and I said, why can't I just use that for flotation as well as being structural?
Mm-hmm.
So then I started putting rails on that and banging them together, and they seem to work really well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get some chewed up a little bit once in a while, but
we call that popcorn.
Yep, green popcorn.
Chris said,
and that's a copyrighted term.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember it was one of the first floats I had set out there, and you came over and you said, did you get that, you know, about, did you get that stake in a good foot deep, and you know, is the float deep enough? Is so, otherwise you're going to come back to popcorn. And I'm like, get back to the truck, and I'm like, I don't know.
You guys are talking about popcorn. I'm like,
I'm not sure what popcorn means. And then we come back, and Jeff had the spot that wasn't, anyway, there was popcorn at Jeff's spot, and I'm like, that's what he means. Yeah, muskrat chews the foam, or what do you call it? The flotation stuff, the foam, and creates popcorn in the water everywhere. If it's not deep enough to drown, or it gets...
They chew the hole right through the bottom of it.
Yep.
The only one I seen worse was the one you had, where it was, they chewed a hole through both of us sitting out here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the majority of the time, you know, I like to use a, you know, have some weight on the trap, you know, heavier trap, yeah. And I'll add some, I always add chain, and I'll put a length of heavier chain towards the trap, you know, to have that extra weight to get the rat down to the bottom. But sometimes they'll hang on for a while and make popcorn.
So what is your ideal trap setup?
If I had to start over right from scratch, you know, I've got a hodgepodge of stuff now. The majority of the ones I have are the Bridger 1.5 specials. Great little trap, pretty heavy for its size. Posi trip pan, machine chain, you know, right out of the box, it's pretty much ready to go. You add a length of chain onto that, and
it's got a bite size of 1.75.
Mm-hmm.
And how much chain, how much chain is on each trap?
I like to have at least 24 inches.
Right.
You know, that allows them to get off the float and, you know, in a deeper water. And, you know, lots of times you're trapping right close to the vegetation, the cattails or rushes, and they'll get tangled up in them. And it seems to be pretty effective.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because, like, with all the rats we caught, I only had 1 foot situation. So, I mean, that's pretty dang good for that amount of rats. Mm-hmm. I seen Clint before. He caught his first 2 rats and had foot situations. First 2 sets he ever made on a house, on a muskrat house, he had foot situations. So, and out of this many rat, catching this many rats, and, you know, you don't have any twist outs, you know, other than one. I mean, that's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, we were talking the other day. I don't mind killing animals one bit, but I don't want to,
mm-hmm.
you know, you don't want to hurt them. You want to take care of business, you know, quickly and efficiently, and seems to be working.
Mm-hmm. Works good. The setup is great. Except for the fiberglass poles that you get fiberglass in your hands on. Other than that.
Yeah, putting them in isn't bad, but I like to get them in there pretty deep. You see, when the wind kicks up, your gear can end up on the other side of the road. Mm-hmm. So when you pull them out, you definitely want to have gloves on there.
Yep.
And you're going to be festering out fiberglass till Christmas.
So you mentioned the wind. So if somebody's not familiar with North Dakota climate, maybe just talk about the climate, how it changes, and how your setups have to change.
Yeah, this is a tough place. I mean, I would say they've got 2 kinds of weather. It's windy and then really windy. you know, in the last few days, was it Sunday? We had T-shirts on. It was in the 70s. Blue skies, sunshine. All the sloughs were like a mirror. It couldn't have been prettier.
Yeah, and you would think you could set anywhere.
Mm-hmm. And yesterday, Sarah stayed back to do a bunch of skinning, and then Jeff and I went out to check our beaver traps and do some setting, and we got about 2 locations in, and with both arms and a leg, you couldn't get the truck door open.
No.
So we passed on setting out more gear. And then today it was windy, cold, and rainy.
Yep.
You know, yeah, the wind, the first time I came up here, I had beautiful weather to start with, and I was sticking out floats everywhere. And, you know, a couple days later, there was 60-mile-an-hour winds, and I was hunting all over the county for my equipment. So I've learned the hard way to kind of watch the weather, see which way the wind's going to be coming from, and to tuck those floats in behind some cover. You'll see how we mostly,
mm-hmm.
we don't set up too much in the middle of the sloughs along the roads. We'll keep them in the corners. I mean, there's definitely rats to catch there, but, you know, if we get conditions like we had yesterday, mm-hmm. you're going to waste the majority of a day trying to find your gear.
Yep.
Yeah, this is a rugged place.
It really is. I had no idea how the weather just, and like you had mentioned about the wind, because you had watched the wind and you're like, well, it's coming out of this direction for the next 2 days, but then in 2 days later, it's a completely different direction. Mm-hmm. So it just turns around and twists. And
yeah, if we were consistent, you could really get a big line out, and you know, even if you had to pass up some locations on the windward side, but you set for the wind one day and then 2 days later it's the total opposite. So I've learned to be a little more cautious,
mm-hmm.
where we put our gear.
We still got caught on a couple spots,
mm-hmm.
you know, where we got there today and the float was blown up into the off the stake, and you know, you're out there with your potato rake
I got lucky. I found every trap mm-hmm. today.
Yep.
Which isn't always the case.
The tater fork.
Yeah, Alan though. Alan probably likes that win. I bought 20 dozen of those Bridgers from one time. He's hoping that I lose them all and buy another 20. yeah, this is a tough place. The people, some rugged folks here, our hosts, the folks who own this, the house we're staying in, you know, they're farmers and ranchers and just good-hearted folks. They've gotten to be like family for me, and you know, friends with their children, and but they're tough.
Yep, every day it doesn't matter. I mean, they're out there tending to those cows, and
yeah, they're calving now, so they're out there, you know, 10 o'clock at night,
2 o'clock, you know, in the
2 o'clock
morning,
in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning.
We see them the next morning, and they just look exhausted. But she's out there making bottles, and they've been pulling calves and going to the vet at 3 a.m. And they work hard for everything that they have here.
Yeah, it's good. The people are really receptive. You know, it's nice to come mm-hmm. somewhere to trap and be welcomed.
Mm-hmm.
You get back east, and that's not always the case.
Yeah, even down to, we stopped at Shields. I didn't have a pair of waders yet, so I stopped at Shields and checking out at the counter, and there was two ladies at the checkout said, "Oh, are you going duck hunting?" And "Nope, trapping." And she says, they both said, "Oh, good, we need you. The muskrats, you know, we have them at our dock, and they're..."
She goes, "Kill them little bastards."
Yeah.
She said, "Kill them little bastards. They're putting seashells up on my dock."
And I'm like, oh my, we're in the right place.
Yeah.
Not often do we hear that.
Yeah, and it was, you know, two women probably 65, 70 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Kill them all.
Well, you've seen the damage that they do to these roads.
Oh, it's crazy. It's crazy the damage they do. Digging into them. Like, you almost got hurt bad on that one where you're walking down the side of the road and fell right into the muskrat.
Yeah, I went down pretty hard. Yeah, they'll tunnel right under the roads.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah, I've never seen anything like it where they are just, you know, the roads are falling in from muskrats before. Not like this. I've seen it like, you know, on people's ponds and stuff where it's kind of fell down, but not on, you know, county roads. Well, I know there's a ton of them that ain't going to be digging no more holes in the roads.
And a bunch of beavers, too. This is the most beavers I've ever seen here. Mm-hmm. We've been getting a bunch of calls and, you know, trying to help a couple folks out and catching their beavers, and so far, so good.
Yeah, and most of the time, the western beaver I caught, they had that western look to them. They were always, you know, down south, like, you know, say Texas or Louisiana, you know, and so it's Arkansas where they're, you know, short fur, you know, it didn't look good. But these things are beautiful up here. They got that kind of that silvery look to them, and yeah, they're beautiful.
Yeah, they're nice.
We haven't ate one here yet, so we don't know. I'm guessing they taste good like Iowa's. They got, mm-hmm. you know, eating corn and basswood.
Yeah, that one spot that I had trapped before you got here, there was a big bean field up above where they were, and you could see all their runs from last summer and fall. Mm-hmm. So I imagine they did a number on that bean field.
Yeah. Which is weird because most of the time down to Iowa, I'm sure that somebody has caught beaver in a bean field, but I've never seen where they were going up in the bean field. It seems like they just moved down to the cornfield. Like, they'll have their pond here, you know, and then, like, because in Iowa, they'll switch, you know, be beans this year, corn next year, generally back and forth. So where the beaver are now, they'll move down to the corn next year, you know, if they didn't catch them. And I've never caught one going into a bean field. Like I say, I'm sure there's lots of them caught going into bean fields. It's generally corn. Because I've never seen their dam made out of bean stalks. You know, it's always corn stalks, you know. They can definitely devastate some crops. If the muskrats can dig them holes, I imagine what a beaver would do. Then we, got the mink and...
Yeah, talk about the mink. That was a funny story. That was pretty cool.
I like it here because, I mean, basically, I mean, some season close, like, the, you know, you trap muskrats till May 10th. And, there's no closed raccoon season. There's no closed beaver season.
No closed coyote season.
No coyote season. No closed badger. No closed fox. It's basically like, and right now, like, the coyote that you caught for that rancher, they look better than Michigan coyotes do in December. So it looks so good we skinned it and getting it tanned, mm-hmm. And we were just catching it as they don't want these coyotes around their calves. So, but
when my
this,
friend,
this place is awesome. I mean, it's awesome that, there's this, You don't have to have name tags except for, on state land, so on private ground. I mean, it really is like the Wild West. And no people.
What'd you say? We won't say what county we're in, but there's...
We won't say the number because somebody could find it.
Yeah, there's not a lot of people in this county.
There's under... In most of the counties I looked on around the eastern part of North Dakota... There's like less than 4,000 people in the whole county, So I mean, it's pretty awesome that there's no people.
Yep, I thought Texas was desolate, and then we get up here and it's like, is there even a gas station? Like, how do we even get to one?
Yeah, like I look at the just to go. I thought, well, I'll run to town and get some pops or some beer or whatever, and they close at 5:30. And I thought, it must just be that one town that closes at 5:30, the gas station and stuff. No, they all close at 5:30. I mean, in the they get up early. They all go to bed early. I mean, it's like the opposite of where we're from. They're open 24 hours, but
the county that I live in has 200,000 more people than the state of North Dakota.
Oh my gosh.
Just the city?
The county.
Oh, the county?
The county that I live in.
Then the whole state?
Yeah, and Erie County is pushing 1 million people, and there's a little over 700,000 here. Hmm. And this is the populous half of the state. The other side of the river, it's a lot more sparsely populated than here.
Yeah, I've trapped a lot of places, and... I really like it down to Texas, but I never thought, I really would like to, have a place there. I would like to have a place here, where I just come out here and stay, and, this would, because every place else was like, it's, going to be too hot in the summertime, and I only want to be there for a short period of time. We're here, you close everything up and be out it. When it's really cold, you can be gone.
Go to Texas.
Well, that's what we do now, but yeah, it's a great, beautiful state. Nobody should come here, because then there's one more. Don't come here. Yeah. Disregard everything.
This place sucks. I remember hearing Clint say, people asking him about what he does for freezing conditions and weatherproofing sets and all that. He says, I go to Texas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was stuck doing what I was doing before, and I wasn't going anywhere. But I kind of changed things a little, and now in the winter I'll go to Mississippi and Texas.
Yeah.
Was it broke as shit and happy as a clam?
Yeah, I definitely I'm looking at when we're going through this country. I'm looking at where you can snaring opportunities and stuff, and it would be a lot of fun. Like we talked about in the wintertime, coming here snaring. But they got tons of mink and
mink too. Look like little otters.
Yeah, they do. When they're crossing the road, I was like, is that an otter or is that a mink? And we're setting 110s for them. And I'm like, would a 110 kill them? Yeah, but to get them to put their head down and not jump over it, So switch to 220.
Oh, I saw that.
How that started was we're going down the road setting muskrat sets, and here in Michigan, you cannot shoot an otter, you can't shoot a beaver, even if it's in your trap, which is absolutely insane. You can't shoot beaver, otter, or muskrat, and I don't know about mink, because generally we're not out there seeing them and shooting them, but we're going down the road. Here you can shoot muskrats, you can shoot mink, hunt them, and we're going down the road and see this mink up on the...
Chris says, there's a mink.
He said, there's a mink. So...
We stop.
We stop, we jump out. It looks like a porcupine getting out with all the weaponry. And these mink dives under the water, and we're waiting for them to come back up. It's just a shallow pool, maybe knee deep. And then Sarah's standing down the road. She goes, there's that mink. And everybody's seen it at the same time. And the gunfire erupted. And we got him. And Chris says, he was over there eating on a muskrat. And then we were walking back to the truck. He says, do you want that muskrat that mink was eating on? And we thought, probably was, no good or rotted for some reason. And then we went over there and Chris picked it up. And that mink had just killed that rat. And it was a little bit of blood on the throat, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was one bite on the head and it was all warm and floppy. So we interrupted the poor guy's dinner.
Yeah, shot him to death. So, that was a monster mink. Yeah, northern Michigan, we ain't got mink like that. Probably a lot of the country ain't got mink like that. But they got a lot of feed here. And everywhere you go, there's tons of mink tracks.
Mm-hmm. I got some great big ones down in Mississippi this winter.
The mink that I sold, probably must have been like 2013, I had caught... I think it was three of them down to Louisiana, and I sent them up to Napa, and I got $24 a piece. That was the last mink I got, decent money, and the price fell out of it after that.
Well, this muskrat price isn't great right now, but we're just going to have to catch more of them, that's all.
Yep.
They're here to catch.
They definitely are.
I know, we post things on Facebook, and they say, why are you going after them? The prices, they're not worth anything, all of that. So what, I mean, you like you said, you drove 30 hours to get here. The market for the muskrat is unknown. What inspires you or motivates you to come down here and chase muskrats?
It's cool. Yeah, I'm not getting any younger, and
like you used to go on a lot of big game hunts, years ago.
Mm-hmm.
How much money did you make on those?
Not too much,
Mm-hmm.
And when I was doing all that, those hunts were, I thought they were expensive then, but they're four times more than that now.
And if you figure that meat by the pound, ribeye is damn cheap.
Mm-hmm.
It's the experience. Mm-hmm. It's the experience going. And we go to conventions all over the United States. And you never see shit. We never see shit. You know, you're going to the convention and you're going to the next one. We can only see, you only see what's on the highway. I mean, we've seen, you know, where the area we're in, we've seen the veins and the blood and the guts of this country, you know, and, you know, you get to know it and, you know, I mean, you're feel like you're a part of it and know the area good. And, you know, just driving down the road on a vacation, you're not getting that.
Yeah, I'm out here to trap, and I want to catch as much as I can, but it is the experience. And we've seen hundreds of thousands of ducks and geese.
Oh, yeah.
And
beautiful. And pheasants.
And pheasants and sharp-tailed grouse and flocks of pelicans. You wouldn't think you'd see flocks of big white pelicans flying around in North Dakota.
Because it reminds me of, like, southern Michigan. When I was a kid, my dad would be out skinning fur. And it's something I had never even thought about. It kind of slipped my mind. But hearing, like, we're all here skinning. And, you know, I hear one pheasant cackling. And then you hear one across the road cackling. You know, and there's four or five of them cackling. You know, I mean, it's something I didn't even know. I didn't even remember until it's, you know.
Mm-hmm. The sunsets, yeah, I mean, you took that beautiful picture the other day, and I mean, we haven't been getting up early enough to see too many sunrises because we've been skinning too late, but the sunsets, not so much today with this crappy weather, but.
You know, but like Sarah said, you know, I mean, people get on there and they say, you know, why are you doing this? You know, my question more is why aren't you? You know, I mean, you know, you get somebody that says, well, you know, in 1980, we got this amount of money. Well, there's been five fur booms since 1980. So you haven't set a trap since 1980. Apparently, the big one when shit really went high in 2013, you missed that one. So if you miss that one, you're probably not going to hit the next one. You know, and the way it is now is, it's like last fall. Everybody, we're putting up raccoon pictures. We're trapping raccoons. Why are you trapping them? They're not worth anything. And they were absolutely right. They weren't worth anything. Nobody didn't want them. You know what? Somebody wants them for, offered us $12, nose count, for scraped and dried raccoons. So if we hadn't trapped them, where are we going to go get them now? You can't go get them now. You know, so if you hadn't went out last fall, and because he offered you $12 right now, that doesn't mean that next year that market's there. You just got to, basically what my dad always told me, I'd say, well, I'm going to go out and do this, and I'm going to get, you know, this amount of leeches or minnows, and he said, you ain't done shit yet. He said, go out and catch them and then worry about selling them. You know, and if you ain't got them, you can't sell them.
Yeah, a lot of guys I talk to, they're waiting for the price to jump up, and then they're chasing their tail. A, they're going to be sitting on a bar stool instead of trapping anyways. Yeah. But even if they did, you know, that 2000, what happened after 2013? $16 rats were $2 rats.
Yep.
So... yeah, these, I'll, if I can find a decent market for them, I will. If not, I'll sit on them. It's my brokerage account. Well, a couple thousand muskrats.
Well, it's like, you know, that fur harvester sale went off, and, you know, they got a bunch of stale stuff up there that they sold, and they sold the junk stuff. And I don't know why. In the country, the rats were, you know, $4.50. Some of the sales were going for $6 to $7 for rats, and as soon as the fur harvesters thing went crappy, now, you know, they're saying that, you know, well, the rat market's struggling. It's only struggling. Number one, either you don't have the overseas market that you had, because you'd already, I sold overseas. You have a contract that they'll take this amount. It has nothing to do with fur harvesters. So either you really don't have the contract that you say you have and you're just sending your stuff to fur harvesters when you buy it, or you're cheapening the price because the fur harvesters had a sale, the price went down. And, I mean, why? it has to work the other way then. You were only paying $75 for bobcats, and they sold them same cats, say, for $150 in fur harvesters. Well, then the price should be $150 instead of $75. Because you can't have it where the rats are affected, but the bobcats aren't. I know it's nice to try and have it both ways, but it just doesn't seem right. So, I just want see the trappers, and I mean, it's a lot of work going on doing this shit, and, you know, make as much as you can. I mean, the fur buyers got to make money, you know, but I don't mind even leaving some meat on the bone for them, because I want, like we talked before, you know, we want them to be there next year to buy the stuff, and I don't want to send to Canada where, you know, it's like a disposable, you know, where you throw away your stuff, you know, it's basically, you know, so you ain't got to throw it away, you just let them do it, you know. So I want them guys out there, but I don't want them to make it all on just on me. You got to spread it around. Yeah.
You guys had hooked me up with that fella in in Louisiana.
Mr. Perry.
Mr. Perry.
Yeah. And his son.
Yeah, they're gentlemen, both those fellas. And I sold them all my beavers and most of my otters and, you know, a bunch of coons and a handful of coyotes that were worth skinning down there. And I mean, I was pleased. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure he's going to make some money on it.
Yep.
And more would have been better, but I didn't have to take what he was offering me.
No.
I could have hauled him 1,300 miles and then figured out what tried to figure out what to do with them then.
And maybe got less.
Yeah, and maybe got less.
No. Yeah, them guys are awesome guys. They they treated us, you know, really good. And we tried to get hooked up with them this year on Solomon, our Arkansas beaver, but it just didn't, you know, they weren't in the same area where we were at when we were passing through, and it didn't work out, but we'd sell them in a minute, wouldn't we?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
You know, we had good communication with them throughout, you know, we told him we were headed down there and what we were after, and he checked in, you know, how's it going on the trap line, and then he checked back in, you know, how did you go? You said you were going to be finishing up on this date. How did it go? And, I mean, yeah. It was a pleasant experience, and always, like you said, they were always gentlemen.
What I liked about he wanted to buy the fur, mm-hmm. and he let me know he wanted. A lot of these guys, they act like they're doing you a great big favor
mm-hmm.
by buying their fur from you. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was good. I look forward to selling to him again.
Yeah, that's how it was with us. He let us, you know, that way I never thought of it like that, mm-hmm. but that's how they were. They were like, yeah, we want your fur, you know. And they were just, it was a pleasant experience. When we were done, it was a pleasant experience. And I talked to his son quite a bit, messaging back and forth on Facebook. And, you know, they're just such nice guys.
He was happy. He agreed on the otter. We agreed on an otter price. Then he saw all those Delta otters, and he got real happy.
We're getting ours tanned last year when we sold to him, so mm-hmm. we didn't sell many otter, but.
Well, it's been good having some company. Mm-hmm. Normally I fly solo mm-hmm. a lot of the time,
mm-hmm.
but it's good to do both.
Yeah.
Yeah, I said I would absolutely come back, with trapping being a second part of the trip, because you have fed us so well. Yeah. I mean, Chris is like an amazing chef. Like we have gourmet suppers every night, and he just whips them. He's like, we're just going to have breakfast for supper. And in my mind, I'm thinking like a couple eggs and toast. Oh, no, we had...
Or cereal.
Yeah, or cereal. No, we had eggs, like so perfect eggs. Like, he made hard eggs and he didn't even flip them. but we had hash browns, we had pancakes, he made biscuits one night. And then we had the sausage, yeah. What was that? It was
venison,
yeah.
I would say
so good.
And
the bacon.
The bacon.
Yeah, like he sliced the bacon off of the thing, off of the slab.
I have to say the chicken and rice was number one, mm-hmm. but the Moose Burgers were like right neck and neck with them, and the Moose Burgers were awesome. And then we had
Bear Bolognese. The Bear was pretty good too.
Nobody gonna know what the hell that bolognese is. I ate it. I don't even know what it is. It's, I don't know. It's
spaghetti sauce with meat in it.
I would have, if I was gonna describe it, I would describe it as soup on the spaghetti. But it was awesome.
It was so good.
We even had, I don't know what kind of soup that was. It had chicken in it, and then it had some green stuff. It was a really good soup.
Yeah, and he's like, yeah, what'd you do? You made the bone broth overnight and all this.
Yeah, he cooked the chicken bones all night.
Yeah, he cooked the chicken last night and then picked all the meat off and let the bones simmer, all night and made a stock, and today we got soup.
Just like that. And tonight we had BLTs, and he says, you know, typically I make my own mayonnaise. Who makes their own mayonnaise?
Yeah, like when we went out to hit us out at his house out to Buffalo, when he made the coleslaw, he's like shredding the carrots.
Yeah, I shredded your own carrots. I'm like,
this guy's got that? This guy's got a severe mental problem. Everybody always tells him, you know, have you ever thought about opening a restaurant? That's what he used to do, is head a restaurant. Restaurants.
Yeah, enough of that.
Yep, so when I think of North Dakota, I think of the food, and then, you know, the muskrat trapping was good too, but the food was great. So thank you for taking care of us.
My pleasure. Yeah, it's good to have some company. I had some company down in Mississippi this year. I met a young fella at the Little Valley show, and we started, I was talking to another guy about Mississippi, and I looked over and his eyes were bigger as saucers. I said, hey, you want to go to Mississippi? And it turns out he had the time, and a young guy named Bo Blanchard, and you know, we've got,
you said that's Bill's grandson.
Yeah, Bill's grandson. Yeah. Bill's a pretty well known fellow around the trapping community. So yeah, Bo, we traveled down together. I was hauling my big trailer. He hauled the side-by-side down, and we had a really good time down there.
Did you guys drive down? You drove down separately?
Yeah, he was pulling my side-by-side with his truck. Mm-hmm. And on the return trip, my son Chris came down, and we hung out for a couple of days, and then we went home, but... Yeah, Bo was good. We caught a bunch of critters and had some crazy weather there, too. Mm-hmm. And we get down there, they had been having a drought, so everything was dried up. And
that's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're excited and get there and start setting like hell. And then I'm guessing that it rained and then the traps are underwater.
Well, first it froze. I'd send you a picture. Mm-hmm. We had four, and you could have driven a truck across the ice down there. We had 4 inches of ice. And then we got a 6-inch rain. And everything that had been dry was all flooded out. But we made it work.
So the ice saved you, basically.
That was rough. I would have rather had the high water.
I was down in Louisiana one year, and we got like, I don't know, 2-3 inches of ice. And it was all just like crystal clear, perfect ice for seeing, you know, bubbles under. So I'm got my bag on with some 330s in it, and I'm skating around, you know, with my hip boots on around these ponds, walking on the ice, and I wasn't paying no attention. I'm just looking for the bubbles and, you know, the air bubbles under the ice, and I look up, and there's a whole line of traffic. Remember, this down in Louisiana. There's a whole line of traffic stopped watching me walk out on the ice. they probably, you know, never seen that before. They're probably like, who's this suicide jockey?
Yeah, those animals down there, too, up north, you get a cold snap, it gets them on the go, but it freaks them out.
I never seen one air bubble under the ice where anything came out under that ice. Not one. The only thing I seen was... because there was snow, was after the next night it snowed, and the next there wasn't a coyote track I found in the snow. The only thing that moved was the bobcats, and I thought, well, shit, I'm just gonna ride around and mark for these find every bobcat trail I could find and take, you know, mark it and, on the GPS, and then put tape, you know, some green flagging. And I went around and flagged all them.
Did it pay off?
Yep. Yep, it did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I still got to mark the spots marked on the map. Probably all cut down now. What? It's been quite a few years ago, probably 10 years ago.
So what was your favorite part of the muskrat trapping, Sarah?
Well, other than the food. Just the area, the area, just being engulfed in the area and seeing all the, seeing like the pike at the pike spot. Like, I was so obsessed with seeing the pike. Every time we drove by, the pike were, you know, coming out of the water. But I mean, just the repetition of catching so many muskrat and seeing them swim by, and it just, it reminded me of coon trapping in Iowa. It's similar to muskrat trapping up here. It was just kind of similar, and you could drive and jump out, and then you'd have a muskrat or two or three or four. The day that one day I checked the float and we had four. You made a four. We call them. He calls them four bangers.
Four bangers.
And put four traps on it, and we had four muskrats. Man, that was fun.
Yeah, and today we come up with a new term. They're caught by the head in a foothold. It's called a headbanger. Yeah. Oh, I just had a headbanger.
Yep. But, you know, Jeff and I aren't super organized, and we just kind of...
Well, you're not, I am.
...jump in the truck and go. I mean, there is so much work. Is somebody that's just on Facebook looking at a picture saying, oh, it'd be really nice to catch 174 muskrats in a day. That, there's so much work that goes behind that, and we have seen the amount of thought that you have put into these trips because you've done several of them. But you just want to talk about, like, all the work behind the scenes that somebody is not thinking about just to plan on coming on a trip like
just
this.
Just to build them floats is a major undertaking.
Yeah, but I enjoy that stuff. I got my little fur shed / shop, and I get the table saw out and start building muskrat floats. But I enjoy it, and even, you know, the trap prep. The majority of the traps I have the springs cooked on them.
Yes, I appreciate those traps.
Yeah,
yes.
That you know. On a busy day, you'll be setting hundreds and hundreds of traps, you know, with your, and they, without those springs weakened up a little bit, you just tear your hands up.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't need the most powerful trap in the world to hold a muskrat.
Mm-hmm.
Then when you're out in the waters, you know, you can be up to your knees or up to your waist. Mm-hmm. And you can just set the traps. They're easy to manipulate. You set them with your hands instead of having to put them on your knee. And
so we're talking, like, I don't know, 60, 70 dozen traps.
Yeah, I think I came out here with... I had a bunch that I left out here 2 years ago for my last trip. These folks that we stay with, I've got a corner in the one room in the barn with a mountain of float and floats and milk crates full of traps stacked up to the ceiling.
My favorite thing that we walked in that shed, I could not stop laughing. Pulls out the muskrat basket that goes on top of the truck. What the heck? Oh my gosh, I could not stop laughing. He's talking about this basket that he has that goes on top of the truck to air dry the muskrats. And so we drug it out of the barn and he screwed it to the top of the thing. That was funny. I don't know why I thought that was so funny.
Getting the fur dry is a chore.
Like right now. It's raining out and can't get them dry.
Right now it's you know, it's raining and it's humid and we'll get them dry. But when I stop back here, I've got some 2x3s mounted to the telephone pole and staple gun. You staple them by the tail and let Mother Nature dry them out. Mm-hmm. And that rack I put on top of the truck one, to get them dry, and B, you see the amount of gear that's involved. Yeah. Those floats and all the traps, they take up a lot of space. So every cubic inch under that cap that you have access mm-hmm. to is more crap right. you can haul around.
And highly organized. I know I put 3 rocks back there, and I could tell Chris is like, Sarah, you and these rocks. I put the rocks where a crate needed to go, and yeah, every inch is...
No, they're in the back seat.
Yeah.
I had to put them in the back seat.
Yeah, before we go set, it's pretty organized. But Jeff saw yesterday when we're pulling, stuff comes out of the water, and in the back of the truck it goes, and empty it out when you get back here, and then do it all over again.
Yep, so you have floats, you've got traps, you've got stakes, and then the fur handling stuff. I mean, how many freezers did you bring? And you know, all the fur has to be froze, and the meat, and
yeah, there's a lot. Logistically, it's, you know, there's a lot to figure out. But it's, you know, by trial and error, I just try to get more efficient. You know, I think I've got an okay system, but you know, you look for ways to save seconds. You know, if you can save 10 seconds on a muskrat and you got 172 of them out there, you know, that's sleep.
Yep.
You know, if you're skinning till midnight or 1 or 2 in the morning and up by 6 or 7, you know, time's pretty precious.
Yep.
But we did take a lazy day.
We did. Drove to the city.
We took a short day, and the pair of waders that I had been using were leaking a little bit. Then they started leaking a lot. And then my backup pair of waders, they must have shrunk. I hadn't worn them in a couple years, and they
which goes back to the good food he's making.
Yeah, they shrank quite a bit. I got in them, but I couldn't get my feet more than 6 inches off the ground.
He went to get in the truck. He said, aren't going
to
work.
Yeah, he went to get in the truck to put his leg up to get in the truck and couldn't get in the truck. He just turned, he didn't say, no, I'm just turning around and walk back to the house and put his leaky waders back on.
I was dying.
I think I said, heck with this, but in a little different. Yeah. So, we took a ride into Bismarck. Went to Shields and sniffing around for waders, and Sarah found a $500 pair of waders marked down to a couple of $100. Mm-hmm. And they're better than the other ones, because the old ones, both legs were leaking. These brand new ones, only one of them had.
So you're getting better.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to believe they have a pair of waders that's, you know, $500, and they got a hole in them. When you take them back, you should ask them, say, oh, is the pair that doesn't leak, is it cost $1,000? Because I'm, yeah. Whatever it costs, that's what I need.
Yeah, it's a little hole now, but I don't imagine it getting any smaller by the end of the trip.
No. Yeah, that night we went to an awesome Mexican restaurant.
Oh, we did. We had tableside guac. So good.
Yeah, that was really good.
Yeah, the lady comes up and says, would you like me to make guac for you? Well, yeah. Hell yeah.
And I'm like, I don't really like onions, and I don't really like jalapenos. And Chris is like, so you're basically going to eat an avocado. It was darn good, though.
Mm-hmm.
Got jalapenos on the side. Turned out pretty good.
He had to go to town from... It was only a 70-mile ride to...
Yeah. Yeah. To go to town 70 miles. We thought we were desolate in Texas when it was 45 minutes.
There's a neat little town to the west of us away, yeah. So we stopped at the grocery store and see my old buddy.
Yeah. There's this old town, like, and... Well, he goes in and asks this guy at the grocery store. It's only open till like 5 o'clock. And he says, what's happening? And the guys told him, he said, well, Mary doesn't work here anymore. Like, we know who Mary is. They said, but the bar's open over in this other town. We've been by this, and it looks like an abandoned town, like a ghost town. We're like, there ain't no way in hell that bar's open. I mean, there's cobwebs in the winter, in the spring, and there's bars on the window. I mean, it looks like it's abandoned. And then the other day, gives good information because the lights, they had their bush lights, blinking bush light sign on in the window, and they were open.
Yeah, it was Friday night.
Yep, Friday night, they were open. So, that guy ain't full of shit. He knows what's going on. Mary don't work there no more, and that bar's open. I ain't sure what he knows other than that. He wasn't there today when we stopped.
Yeah, he said, what's new in the last 2 years since I've seen you? Oh, Mary doesn't work here anymore.
Oh, shit.
But yeah, these people out here they've been really good to me. You know, they call with, you know, about the beavers. Like, you know, you're trying to make a couple bucks doing this. And, you know, down in Mississippi, a lot of the beaver work. And they ask, oh, what's it going to cost? And, you know, we've been doing it for, we haven't been charging them. You know, the beavers are worth a couple of bucks and mm-hmm. a little bit of goodwill. And these folks have been really, really good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got a whole bunch of numbers in my phone there. And I guarantee I could call just about any one of them. You know, my truck falls through the road or a muskrat.
Well, even today you said, you know, it was rainy. The guy called and said, you know, did you check? And he said, well, it's kind of rainy and don't want to get stuck. And he said, if you do get stuck, I've got a tractor and Keith has a tractor. So, you know, just don't be afraid to call. And normally they would say the opposite, like, be irritated by that.
No, they definitely some good people up here. Yeah, it's like the day when we went over to, you know, that's what's so cool about up here is with the people's attitude, you know, and then like they say, the laws, you know, it's like Chris said, well, what do you think about, you know, going to get them waiters today? And I told him, I says, what good is having no check time, because there's no check time here, if you never use it? Mm-hmm. Let's run them tomorrow. Yeah, so that's what we did. Run part of them and then check the rest the next day.
Yeah, and with it,
everything's dead.
Everything's dead. When with it, that water is still, even when it was in the 70s a couple days ago, I was running without gloves, putting in colony traps. You stick your arm down in there, it's pretty cold.
Yeah, they're not getting green bellies real fast in that water. But no, it's definitely awesome. You definitely have to tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
And when he tells this story, you have to imagine where we're at, where there's less than 4,000 people in the whole county. When you get out on a county road, you open the doors. I don't even shut my door anymore. I just get out, and we're parked.
Sometimes we're in the middle of the road.
We're in the middle of the road with the doors open. There's nobody coming down these roads. I mean,
even if we see a vehicle, we're like, oh, there's a vehicle. Like, we haven't seen one in so long.
Yeah, and most time on the cement roads, Chris is on the wrong side. He thinks he's from England.
Yeah.
We're driving down the wrong side of the road in the ditch. You know, but so, you know, there's nobody around.
Oh, you're talking about the Fagawa?
Yeah, the Fagawa.
So we're on our way back from, we had one slough left to look at. We're getting close to where we're staying. The state road, I mean, it's literally, there's nothing for miles and miles and miles. Great big country, you see forever. And we're going down the road, and there was a bicycle going the other way. And when we passed him, the guy stopped, and he was just in the middle of getting off his bike. And we had some floats not too far from there. I'm like, what the heck's this guy doing? First of all, what's a guy doing on a... And he wasn't like a a recreational bicyclist with a stupid helmet and those gay little shorts on.
No. There was definitely something different about this guy.
So I slow down. I'm looking in the rearview mirror. I'm watching. And see, he's laying on the ground. I'm like, what the heck's going on? So we stop in the middle of the road.
You got your binoculars out.
I get the binoculars out. And he's just laying there. So we turn around and drive right up next to him. And he was laying there. I think he was drinking out of the...
Yeah,
he looked like a wild animal.
Yeah, he was drinking out of that slough. Oh my God! Some of them stink so bad from rotted shit in there, and muskrat shitting all over the place.
And this guy, I started talking to him. I'm like, "You okay?" And he definitely had some chemical influence going on. I don't know what his deal was, but he
wasn't looking at you. He was
out there.
Yeah, he kept putting his head down, and he was acting really weird.
Yeah, and he had a pink duffel bag over his shoulder, and he was looking for a city. I'm like, well, you're a long way from a city, Jack. And
70 miles to be exact.
And then he told me he didn't have any money, and then he was looking for a McDonald's or a Jack in the Box. And, it was just bizarre because, I mean, we're on the side of the road in the middle of nowhere. And I said, where did you come from? He goes, Fargo. I mean, that's a long, long way from here. And, I mean, I felt bad for him, but we weren't going to adopt him. So Sarah made him a peanut butter sandwich, and I gave him a Mountain Dew. We said, see you later.
He was eating the sandwich the last time we saw him.
Oh, goodness.
But he got the nickname... what's the nickname we gave him?
Oh, the Fagawe?
Yeah, you have to tell why we call him that.
Oh, the Fagawe Indians. They're a nomadic tribe that used to be in this in this area.
Chris tells me this like it's a real thing. Like, he's like, Sarah, do you know about this tribe that's out here?
Yeah, they
well,
just
well, that, and you told the same story to the rancher lady that owns this place. He's telling her today about this nomadic tribe, and she's just looking like, really around here.
Yeah, they wander the plains aimlessly saying, where the fuck are we?
So that's this guy was the chief of the Fagawe, because he didn't have no idea where he was at.
Yeah.
But one thing we learned about the Fagawe is that they do like Jack in the Box.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're ever around a Jack in the Box, you might see a Fagawe there. If you see somebody,
if he has a pink duffel bag, you know where he came from.
We always wondered where this guy ended up. So if you see a guy buy a Jack in the Box with a pink duffel bag on a bike that looks like he came across the border, the southern border.
And what'd you say about his tire on his bike? It only had 3 rotations left.
Yeah, there wasn't much tread left on that. But God bless him. I hope he's okay and found where he was going.
Yeah, I don't see a long, happy life for him, the way things are going for him now.
He can change things.
He could change, but I mean, on the current course...
Yeah,
just the drinking out of the muskrat slough.
He was in rough shape.
Let's go, Brandon.
Yep. When did you say the last time this county voted for the bad guys?
1932? Yeah. Yep. No, this is
my kind of place.
These are definitely my people here. The trappers are only ones. The trappers have a lot of times the same mentality as these people here. You know, just want to be left alone. We're doing our thing. You do your thing. As long as it doesn't interfere with what I'm doing, I don't give a shit what you're doing.
Yeah.
And that's And there's not a lot of them to, you know, except for, like you said, like the weirdos, you know, down there where they're from somewhere else and moved here. And they, they told Chris, he said, well, can I get permission to, trap this? Oh, no, because, it would devastate our son to see something dead. Well, do you realize that you live in cattle country in North Dakota? Why'd you move here?
Yeah, there's...
That's always the problem, is people are somewhere and they don't like the way things are there, so they move to somewhere that's not like that, and then they want to have it exactly like the shithole they come from.
Mm-hmm.
Well, don't do that to North Dakota. Just stay... Go somewhere else. Because it's great here. This is like the last American holdout. I thought Alaska was, but this is even, more.
Yeah.
Every trapper I ever talked to, this is exactly, the mentality of people that they wish was in their area.
Yeah, I love coming here and spending time here, but, I love it around where I live too, but it's just nice to be able to, you guys do it together.
Mm-hmm.
But you had done it. You were solo for decades.
Yep.
Running around the country. But I'm fortunate to have somebody at home to hold down the fort and take care of business and be an understanding trapper companion. So
yeah.
Thanks, Allison.
Yep.
And we won't tell her what she calls you.
Yeah, that's not for public consumption. She knows what we're talking about.
It's not flattering.
I thought it was kind of complimentary.
Well, it was, but I don't think she meant it that way. I don't think it was meant in a positive way. So we were planning on doing a podcast, kind of talking about our Texas, adventures, and, a lot happened down there with Albert, and we had hit a snag on doing that, which we'll probably talk about at a later time, but we definitely are going to be doing a podcast talking about, Texas and stuff, right? And, covering some of the stuff that happened down there and, because we had a great time in Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
We basically... And,
beaver season is still open in Michigan, so maybe we'll be out with Haggerty.
Yeah, Jeff's supposed to come
next
up.
Week.
Yeah, I sure hope he comes up, but... Mm-hmm.
And don't forget grinding up muskrat carcasses.
Oh, yeah.
That'll be the highlight of your...
We got to get them all the way back to Michigan via Iowa.
Yeah, we got a whole load of carcasses. You can't put another rat carcass in the back of that... In the back of that 3/4 ton. Plus, she just picked up a whole load, and we filled the freezers before we came out here. Plus, mm-hmm. We got, was there 150 buckets? They got to be dealt with, plus 3 pallet loads of meat at F&T I got to pick up. We got the house in Iowa, then we got the house in Michigan, and the one in Michigan's in like lowlands, and in the spring you can't. I tried to drive out there last year, and buried the 3/4 ton truck out there, and they had to come pull me out with an excavator, and when we were getting ready to go to Iowa, it was like that, and F&T was nice enough to let me just, leave the 3 pallets there from Nick, and so we got to deal with that when we get back. And that's like, a lot of people, say, well, I'd like to do that, and I love what I do, but having to deal with, rotted meat in July and stuff, now you wouldn't. If you don't like flies, not for you. One time I was using that, one of the fly killing baits, and I was putting it on top of the thing killing the flies, and there were so many flies that they would get like 4 or 5 inches deep, of dead flies on top of them. You know, the barrels trying to get into them. I got them all blocked off so they can't get in there. And there was dead bodies of flies. You could track the dead bodies out the driveway. It's never been like that before that or after. And the thing is, there was so many wasps and yellow jackets around there because they're eating the dead bodies of the flies. It was like a nightmare. So.
Glamorous.
Hey. We have a good life.
Well, thanks for coming up here and playing for a week.
Well, yeah, thanks for having us. I know you've put in a lot of work to get a trap line to this point, and we appreciate all the hard work that you've done up to this point and taking care of us and keeping everything going. I mean, you were just out there before we hopped on here turning the muskrats like hot dogs on a grill, make sure that they're drying out there, so definitely kept things moving for us. So
yeah, I was laying down taking a nap when you come down, rousted me out.
Yep. Thanks for joining us again on the show.
Yep. Hopefully see you next week.
Oh, yeah.